Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Discover the Copiah Advantage. Copiah County is a Mid-South gem with a spirit of opportunity, a business-friendly environment, and access to major transportation networks. Copiah County, let's do business. Visit CopiahWorks.com today and discover the Copiah Advantage.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome into the middle of March. Yeah, that's right. We're a little past the center. On the other hand, guess what? It's spring and it's a little bit jacket weather today where I am. I don't know about where you are. However, the good news is it's perfect for all the gardening chores we've got to do at this point in the year to keep us going, get us ready for the weather when we don't really want to be out there every single day, and also to get the food crops in so that we can make sure we've got the tomatoes and squash and one thing and another that we are all looking forward to. Welcome. This is the Garden Mama Show. I hope we don't get too diverted today. Lance, it's puppy day. So we're going to have a puppy report.
They're doing great. There's nothing left to eat in the garden. He was funny the other day. It was nice weather, sitting there enjoying outside, and the fig tree, it's done. It's not coming back.
I'm so sorry.
And so it's a big chew stick, and it's still in its bucket, and it's more like a memorial.
I understand.
At this point.
He did take that one down.
So he went over there and kind of looked at it and didn't even want it anymore.
No.
Because it didn't have any green left.
It's so done.
Yeah, I mean, that's one report.
That's funny.
Yeah, and as you know, I know it's not puppy. It's not cat day.
Uh-oh.
But, you know, I had a nice run for 5 days straight of the cats before the rain.
Oh,
and, you know, they
the
really,
trophies.
Oh, they were providing. If there was something like rat stew, I would have been
eating. You would be having lots of that.
Living in high cotton there, yeah. So, but
now, y'all, don't get nervous. These are not in his house.
No,
they live in the woods house.
And it was funny because every day before work, they would get closer and closer to the door of the house. So the last morning I walked out, and I said, you know, I know there's one here.
Of course.
I stepped right on it.
No.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it's between the car and the front door. It's so funny how they present them.
Well, they always want you to know that they're thinking of you. That's
and the bird dog, he knows. He can smell it through the door. He knows when they've got
of
one.
Of course.
He gets, it'll be 2 in the morning, and he just starts pacing back and forth.
This morning was very, very quiet at my house, except for the 3 cats who were lined up in front of anywhere I wanted to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently,
yeah.
Dinner last night was not adequate. They were up this morning before me, ready.
You know, everything's waking up.
I don't know what that
is. I was surprised.
It's springtime, I guess.
I haven't been able to see the sun come into work in a long time. And now we're starting to get that. Just a little bit. But today, you know, the Saturday is always nice because you actually get to wake up and see a little sun. And you get that before you get in.
That's right.
Everything's waking up. The birds are out and about, I noticed. And, the roses look great. The yard's green and thick. And, the irises are starting to get some height to them.
I now have enough chickweed and Poa annua, for those of you who like those little grasses like I do. They are now taking over the edge of the bed, which means it's time for the string trimmer to come out and put that line back in place where it belongs. But, you know.
The nice clover.
There'll be beautiful clover right now. There will be in excess of 50,000 people probably in my general neighborhood today because today is, of course, the annual. Is this the 100th? I don't even know how many years they've done this.
This is the party that is thrown.
This is the party that
is
thrown.
It is the big daddy.
For St. Patrick's Day, which is, of course, earlier this week, but this is the parade day, and they're already there.
Oh, of course. It's an event.
If you have never been to this from the outside and you just think, oh, this is just too insane, the children's parade and then the pet parade, all these things happen at like 8 and 9 o'clock in the morning. You can be there and at the same time be back home if you want to, but there's a lot of fun going on, a lot of kids, a lot of things happening. I just wish that I had sorted through all of my beads. I could have given away all the green beads today to somebody else who's going to go to the parade, but I didn't do that. Oh, coming up today on supertalk.tv, by the way, when you pop in there, and I hope you will, not just because you want to see the Garden Mama Show t-shirt that I have available for you that I'm wearing today. Well, you can't have this one, but I have some in Gary's purview. He can send them to you. Here's the thing. This is really a very, very nice time of year, even in my garden. The lemon tree is blooming. The loropetalum are blooming. There's all sorts of shrubs and things that are putting on their big show. But one of the things I'm really tickled for you to see is the variegated Solomon seal. This is the best it has looked. It's a very subtle plant with a very light white edge and just a little bitty bell-shaped flower that drops off of most of the stems. And it's really very pretty. I like it. It's a little bit elegant, a little more elegant perhaps than me. I've also got, I finally found the tag for the spinach that I was looking at and am now growing, trying to figure out if anybody else has grown Seaside. And there's also a list today. I'm a big fan of MSUcares.com, the state, well, basically it's Cooperative Extension's website, but because it's MSUcares.com is how you have to remember to look it up. This is a great list of different Rudbeckias that are just beautiful, that are really, really passing all the tests, doing very, very well in our state. So if you like Black-Eyed Susans, you probably want to take a look at that and see if you can't put your hands on some of those varieties. It's really nice. 888-808-8637. This is your phone number. Real gardeners, real questions. We hope real answers. I hope I'm right. Most of the time I am. This is the place to call. This is the time to talk. 601-879-4395, of course, is our text line. And quite frankly, I have to figure out how to open that up in the midst of all these other things this morning. I'm having a technical jumble, but I'll get there. I promise. Thomas in Macomb says that it is jacket weather in Macomb too.
And they're a good bit south, so that's nice crisp.
Just for a few more hours.
Yeah, it'll be probably 98 by 2 or 3, and maybe 37 by the end of the evening.
He is not a meteorologist. he does not
I
play one on
radio. Definitely in those trying times
when you have to have somebody to tell you something.
When it was funny because we had those storms that were all over the south. Back, on the other side of the year. And I remember in the morning thing, I'm looking at all the weather and I say, well, there's huge storms coming through the Midwest and everything. And so if you're traveling, Paul's like, why are you talking about the Midwest? I'm like, because it's a huge storm. I mean, it was huge, I'm not a meteorologist.
We do know people there.
We might have somebody. We do have people that listen up
exactly.
there.
We do.
Yeah, we are definitely global now. So, but yeah, I've learned a lot about the weather, when you're doing it and seeing the actual printouts from the Weather Service, and those things are very helpful. And that I try to stick to that. I see none of that today.
I'm such a nerd. I do read the long term forecast, which is
They had the El Nino La Nina report, and I wanted to say that if you're interested in looking at what the projections are for this summer, there is a good report out there that showed you graphs and charts and all that. But what maybe we could expect as far as the types of temperature this summer.
That would be
well, and it was just you have the pressure
range,
system.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it looked like it could be a pretty warm summer from what it said, and so we might want to prepare
more record breaking.
Yeah, I'm not.
What does it mean when it comes to the garden? What that means, of course, is not only to put out your version of irrigation if you're going to need it and get that in place.
That's what I'm saying. We might want to prep
top. Whether you've got stuff you need to repair in an in-ground system or whether you've got things that lay on top of the soil, you need to work on those. But it's also the time to make sure that you are watering deeply. Because if we water deeply in the spring, we have less problem with the roots trying to find some water in the summer. And that's just that slow and low thing, low pressure and very slow, let it all soak in. I have actually seen gardeners tapping their foot and looking at their watch to see how long they need to water. Okay, if you need to do that, that's fine. But what I'm telling you is, Garden Mama says, just go slow and low. Let it get nice and soaked, and you'll have done your job. That's what it takes, okay? Okay. Oh, my goodness. Coming up in very, very soon now, as a matter of fact, on April the 6th, I'm looking forward to seeing y'all at this. Every time I see pictures from our friend over at Doris Berry's Farmers Market, Peaches and I laugh at, have we tried that yet? You know, have we had that one yet? We tried the peppers, we tried the pickles, we tried the jellies. So many good things. And there will be a magnificent basket to be given away that day. You can go there and register. You can send me an email, mamaonair@yahoo.com, and we'll get you into the drawing. And then we'll take your picture and we'll all smile because you're going to have so much fun with this big basket. Then April 6th, also on the same day from 1 to 3, Mark and I will be at Floydine's Flower Farm on Highway 35 in Carthage. Now, this is a plant sale that's going on at the farm. That she grows plants and flowers and cats and one thing and another. It's going to be an interesting time, but he and I will only be there for a couple of hours. So if you need to go in the morning and miss me, that's okay. There'll still be plants there to get your hands on and a lot of fun stuff going on. I promise. We will be there from 1 to 3. That is the same day as Central Mississippi's 75-mile yard sale, which goes from Vaden to Walnut Grove, y'all. I mean, come on. It's going to be a fun day up there. And I will be there from 1 to 3 with Peaches. We'll have ourselves a good time. If you have heard me talk about my goat milk soap that I love so much, I don't know if she will be there, but her goat milk soap will be there. So, okay. Put that on your list. Today, good grief, I'm not going to do this right now. We'll get to that in a little while. Too many things today. Too many things going on. I had no idea that we were so worried about so many bits and pieces of things. Don't we all know what the Easter Bunny looks like? Not the Cadbury Bunny, you know, with the other ears, but
the big bunny with red eyes and white, right?
Well, apparently, the Eastern Finnish brown hare is actually the genome, and they do not turn white. This is following up on the story of the which ones of the bunnies make it because they don't change color for the snow and all that sort of stuff that we talked about last year. This is a chromosomally assembled reference. I'd never heard of a chromosomally assembled reference, but the particular genome is giving us the European brown hare. I did not know that there was a hare research group, and no, it's H-A-R-E. It's actually bunnies, okay, at the Department of Environmental and Biological Sciences at the University of Eastern Finland. Now, that is a T-shirt. But anyway, what they've tried to do, because this is the reason I've never heard of this is because it's very hard to do. They end up taking all the maps of the chromosomes and try and put things together, maybe more for model organisms, in other words, for things that they can imagine doing and using in research. But in this particular case, we now have new methods that will allow us to reconstruct some of this stuff. And, yeah, there, the brown male hare from Lapiri, Eastern Finland, is the Easter Bunny. How about that? So there's plenty of opportunities for the argument about that. But I am happy that someone is looking at it because, after all, you know, you can't find the tooth fairy when you need her, so you got to go after the Easter Bunny, right? Right. How angry are you today, friends? I'm not angry at all today, but there's plenty of days when I am and plenty of days when you are, too. I will admit that having to go cover up my plants for another third night last week sort of gave me a moment. Thought I'd want to vent, and then I read this research. Oh, dear. You know, my mother, rest in peace, she was right about everything, and I really hate that. I know you've all said that about your mothers. I'm sure my kids say that about me. Ohio State University is telling us that the whole thing about venting, you know, we've been told for years that you got to get it off your chest, you know, the primal scream kind of stuff. You got to go out and get that stuff out of you or it'll eat you up and it'll hurt your stomach if you're not expressing your anger in useful ways. Not so much. Actually, when you start to get and when you get all pumped up with the anger to vent in the way that we think about screaming and yelling about stuff, it actually makes you more angry. Your body doesn't react well to it. You know, when you tell somebody that's angry to calm down, it doesn't usually work.
But, I mean, you could yodel. That seems like that would be an if you got to get it out.
That might help. Can we just go sing?
Yeah, you know, sing or yodel.
But that whole business, that what they did was to analyze more than 150 studies. So we know that this is data central in this particular issue. More than 10,000 participants in these studies, and what it turned out is lowering the level of physiological arousal. In other words, perhaps I knew this in some instinctive way. The more angry that I would get when my kids were little, the more angry I get, I tend to get quieter because I'm trying to control and not explode. I always thought I should go ahead and explode, and sometimes I certainly do. But it turns out that's not good for you. So I'm going to try. To reduce anger, it is better to engage in activities that decrease those anger levels. That would be go
like
out
and driving and
sure. Yeah, go out and pull some weeds in the garden. Not all of them. And please don't pluck your eyebrows, you know. People can get into real danger with that too. But there's got to be something that you do. Some people will say they have to take a deep breath and meditate. Some people will say they feel a whole lot better after they scream and yell. But the screaming and yelling actually turns around and makes you more screaming and yelling. And they're the rage rooms, you know, I've ever since I saw the movies as a kid, I've always wanted the set of dishes I could fling against the wall in anger. I truly have wanted to do that. And then I realized that it would be me that would have to clean it up. And since I like that even less, I have never done that. But there are rage rooms that allow people to go and express that, and some people certainly get a lot out of it. However, it turns out that generally speaking, the majority of people are, according to all of these studies in various settings, are actually more angry after the anger. So I don't know what to think. Obviously, in today's society, people consider stress to be more of a thing than we used to. We used to say stress was good because it led to creative tension and you could think better. That's probably still true. It's just the compounding amounts of different kinds of stress do not help in the clarity of thought. So they're looking at, for example, not driving, but going running to get some of that stress out. Perhaps some people find that in walking the dog. You know, there are just all sorts of things that we can do. I want you to garden. I want you to take the garden as your retreat from anger and from happiness, too, because neither one of those is exactly what gets to your core. You got to figure out today how you're going to feel and what you're going to do, and you can do that better if you start by gardening. Now, it's a little cloudy right now, but we all know what's coming. Here's the weather report. Stick around. Darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say, it's all right.
Hi, I'm Sammy the Shovel, reminding you how important it is to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig anywhere in or around any homeowner's yard. It doesn't matter if you're putting in a new mailbox, installing a fence, French drain, sprinkler system, even a flower bed. You need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig, or you could end up responsible for a water line leak, utility line with gas or propane, or even worse. Safety is in your hands. Call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from 3 licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
If recent hailstorms...
Y'all know what rah-rahs were, huh? Those are known as saddle Oxford shoes. They were the ones that were black and white or sometimes blue and white, depending on where you went to school. And they were really uncomfortable, as I recall. But we think of those as saddle shoes, and they were also called rah-rahs in South Louisiana, which is where that song is from. Those of you who've never heard that before, welcome to my childhood. Hey now, the Garden Mama Show rolls on, and y'all have got some great stuff today. Jacket Weather in Macomb, Ocean Springs Art Fest going on for 2 days, and yes, we do wish we were there. You're exactly right. I always wish I was in Ocean Springs. Anyway, no offense to anybody else. I'm just particularly fond of Ocean Springs. Ken, I'm looking at the snake plant from last year. I hope that thing came along. It did have a little potential then. But he also wants to know if wisteria can be grown in pots. I guess it would be.
It can.
I've seen it done, but it's a lot of work.
Well, and basically.
You have to root prune. You know, you have to.
I have one that decided to grow into a pot.
Oh, well, now that's a whole nother.
Yeah, it looks like it's potted, but it's not.
Really not.
It just took up
the available space.
It's hilarious. And it's a mature. I mean, I have it roped to the fence so that it gives you more of a tree effect, and then
you got to shoot video at your garden,
and it's hilarious.
Really have
because
to do
yeah,
this.
Well, it's not a row; it's more of a chain, but it kind of keeps it together. But it did come out of a pot, and I followed.
He's chaining
it back.
Up wisteria, y'all.
Oh man, this stuff! The
dog ate the fig tree.
It smells so amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, this time I've sat outside as much as possible under the wisteria, listening to the bees, watching the dog chase every bumblebee out there and every butterfly. And the smell, though, oh my goodness, it's just so, this year, that wisteria is really putting off a great aroma.
It has been delightful. We get that when the fall is dry, that dry weather does not dilute anything in terms of their,
that aromatic before.
Well, it takes a really, really dry year for that.
Okay.
Usually we get there a little bit dilute because our winter is so wet. But we got such dry conditions for them that people are saying in some places that their camellias are bigger and lasting a little bit longer because they feel like they were stressed. And again, it's a case where we think stress is good and we think stress is bad. It depends on how much of it and whether you can take it. But a little stress on a plant will often result in bigger and better flowers. The classic is to say that the plant's worried it's going to die, so it's trying to bloom and set a whole bunch of seed. That may be true. I'm not saying that plants don't think, but I don't think they think. Is that okay? Is that the appropriate way to say that?
Unless you play them the right music, maybe.
Oh, dear. Now I got to start serenading again. Oh, my goodness. Trey's got Granny Smith's blooming. They are beautiful apple trees. Gorgeous flowers, by the way. And, of course, his garden is ready to plant because he's better than me. He's got all his stuff going. I love that. It's just delightful. Well, Ray and Clinton wants to know, was this the last frost? Probably going to be another night below 35 in Clinton, maybe a couple of nights, but maybe not in a row. I think we're into the rebound. I think when it gets cold, it's warm enough by 10 o'clock in the morning that it's not as big a problem. But I'm always going to say, keep the covers handy because you might be needing to protect something from too much rain. You might be able to protect it from a little cold. But you also might just be protecting some things that you've just transplanted from the incredible wind. As I was leaving my house today, I realized that I have a couple of things out on the stoop that I probably shouldn't have put out there because they're waving more than I want them to. There's a lot of breeze today at my place. So that's the sort of thing that we also use some covers for and a little bit of protection. Best question of the early morning, though, today. What about orange frost satsumas? That's the one that Texas has just announced as a super winner of their stuff, you know, their select plant things. And, yes, I do agree with, by the way, just an interruption, I do agree with Trey that time spent with garden and dogs is never wasted. It's a delightful meme. If you don't happen to have that one, you should grab it. It's a nice one. Anyway, the orange frost satsuma is in a group of them that has been tested in Texas that are as hardy as any mandarins we have done. The satsumas, of course, are the specialized southern magnificent I'm going to just say it, best citrus in the whole wide world. Y'all can argue with me if you want to. But this one, yes, we've always had to worry about growing satsumas in zone 8 because we have some that – we have always had some that were pretty much hardy in zone 8, but there were still years that it took them out. And they have tested these in the hill country in Texas, which is – generally speaking, very much like where we live, except that it does get colder there from time to time. They are announcing these for zone 8, and I'm not going to say whether or not it'll do, but I believe that it will. Now, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more perhaps cautious because I recognize that the soil in Texas where these have been tested is a very alkaline soil, and most of it drains really rapidly. So we could still run into the issue in this part of the world. In our part of Zone 8, we're the same weather, but our soils are heavier, and they stay wetter longer, and they do stay colder for periods of time that they don't see in Texas. So I'm going to try it. If I can get my hands on two of them, I'll put one in a container and one in the ground, and we'll see what happens. So it is Orange Frost Satsuma. Okay? Okay. Oh, fun. There are so many things. Can you sow yarrow in zone 8 in the ground? Yes, you can. The seed are a little bit expensive for the cultivated varieties, so you'll probably want to sow lightly because they do have a good germination. But if you're doing the white old-fashioned yarrow, it's going to come up everywhere. As soon as you have one plant, you're going to have plenty of it. So they grow a little bit differently, but both of them can be sown. Patricia's in Van Cleve. Welcome in today. Thank you very much. What's going on?
Okay, I called you last week. I was going to plant my tomatoes, mm-hmm. and I run into a problem in the tubs. When I dug down in there, I had some kind of little white bugs down in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I put dust so it didn't kill it. So I figured, well, let me put them down in the ground. Well, when I dug down in the ground, I had the same problem with these little white-looking bugs, and I need to know how can I get rid of these things.
Well, I don't know what they are, so that's kind of hard to say. But I will tell you that most of the time we can run things off that we don't want in a particular space with a drench of warm, soapy water, like, you know, from the soap that you wash dishes with. And generally speaking, we can run them out of a container, particularly probably even out of a particular area in your garden that you're trying to get them to go someplace else. But if you can possibly send a picture to me, I'll be happy to try and look a little deeper into it. But usually, if I run into something, for example, occasionally I'll dig in to plant something, and it'll just be completely torn up with sow bugs. Well, I can scoop them up and move them someplace else. But then I will also come back and put a nice soapy water business into that particular spot or that old container just to help clean it up a little bit. And I don't find the problems happen again. But since I don't know what this is, send me a picture if you can.
Or I'll see if I can, but I didn't know if I could use any kind of spectracide stuff.
Well,
obviously,
it's your garden, and if it's a chewing insect, you're better off with a spinosad or something like that. The pyrethrins are going to be for the ones with the teeny tiny mouth parts, like aphids and whiteflies. But if you can go the other direction, but I just don't know what they are, so I can't make a real specific recommendation.
Okay, so you use soapy water.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Now.
I would start there. Yeah.
Okay, I'll see if I can get my sister-in-law to send a picture.
Okay,
to you.
And if you can't get it this morning, send it to mamaonair@yahoo.com, and I'll get it during the week. We'll take a look at it.
Mama.
M A M A on air at yahoo.com.
Yahoo.com. So she can go to this site and send the picture?
It's an email. She can send it to me from her email.
Oh, email.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank
all
you.
Right, then. Thank
good
you very
good
much.
To talk to you. We're going to figure this out. We'll get those things in the ground before very long. Thank you for calling today. Anna's in Oxford. Hello. What's going on today up there in your world?
Well, we've got a sunny day. Thank
yay.
I want to ask you a question, or maybe you know this. The Park District has just put a lot of mulch around lots of trees and everywhere. And not only does it look good, it smells good.
Mm.
And I was wondering, I asked the Park District and the guys who are putting it out, and they're not quite sure where they got it from. I just wondered if you have any knowledge of what sort of mulch is being put around trees and plants and everything else.
Well,
it's a deep, beautiful brown cocoa color.
We usually have a couple of choices. If it's not pine straw, it's usually a ground bark of some sort, which is either going to be a hardwood bark or a pine bark. And the pine bark usually smells more. So this is definitely not definitive, but it is.
It's a nice smell.
I mean, I love that. I like the way my compost pile smells. It's very healthy, you know, and especially when it's all steamy and working real hard. Mulch can be a particularly delightful thing. Now, if they put about 4 inches, that's a problem, but a couple of inches of mulch around everything is just a great thing. But I couldn't tell you the source of it, again, without either looking at it or putting my hands on it.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is my dog came along to it, the female dog, and she sniffed it, and then she immediately rolled in it.
Of course.
Which I wonder what is in it that makes my dog want to roll in it. So
it's probably just fresh enough. When we deeply compost something and make it into a mulch, you know, whether it's any kind of a ground bark of some sort or perhaps even has other products in it, some other organic matters, they all release their own smells, and some of those are very, very attractive to pups.
Yeah. And it doesn't look like ground bark, but maybe it is. I mean, it must be awfully well ground.
Well, it's about like a half inch as opposed to an inch, it could be a product called soil conditioner, which is really just ground bark mixed with compost and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It does hold in place very, very well. The problem that we have in municipal areas, in my experience, is that barks that are too big will wash away the next time it rains, and you don't have the labor to go back and rake it all back into the bed like you would do at home. So sometimes they'll be able to use a smaller particle so that it holds on better.
Well, this is kind of thick, and I noticed around some of the trees they've got the volcano effect, but rain which was coming will probably take care of that. But now I was just curious if you would know any major sources around here
but send me a picture. We'll try and figure out what it is. If we could just capture that smell, I could probably tell you too.
Okay, dear. Thank you.
Thanks, Ann, and have a great day. The snake plant that I'm having trouble with is not really growing at all. Probably need to change the soil. Yeah, I probably do. It may be staying too wet. It may be staying too dry. But when I have – the few problems that I have with snake plants have always been because I had it in some soil that was either so old it was like glue or, you know, something – there was a problem with it. In one plant that I have about 5 different snake plants, and one of them is not doing well. I looked at it yesterday and realized that it's almost like mud. It isn't muddy, but it's almost a muddy sort of a thing. I've got to get in there and do something for it. And that's what yours looks like too. So I'm glad that can be solved. This is so neat. Andrea has a bulb that hasn't bloomed. Now the good news is, a year into it is not a surprise. I would expect this particular bulb to bloom in mid to late summer. But I am going to tell you that it needs more humidity. I can just tell by looking at it. It needs a more humid setting, probably outdoors in the shade. And you're going to want to go to a flower-forming fertilizer because it has enough leaves now that it can begin to get ready to bloom. I like that. That's nice. Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Gorgeous, gorgeous day in Biloxi. Thanks, Brian. These are really, really lovely. Native azaleas as well as our classics. Just really nice. The azaleas are, in fact, very happy today in Biloxi. They're beautiful. We will be putting those things up so that when you come over to visit supertalk.tv, you won't just have to see me. Although, hello, you can see me. And then there'll be all of these other great pictures as we go through the morning. We're going to turn that thing into something one of these days. We'll have to have an album, I suppose. I don't know if y'all want to know this, but I figure out I better tell you. They're talking about Category 6 as a hurricane measurement. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is we don't know that that's going to happen. It's conversation. Now, for those of you, I'm going to look this up. I never do this, but I'm going to do this. The The coolest thing yesterday, not yesterday, coolest thing this week was looking up and seeing that, in fact, Ricky Matthews had the amazing John Mohead on his show. And this is the jamboree they're doing. They're doing a whole bunch of stuff. This is called Delta Rising. And I want to know more about it because I love this man's music. Let's go, okay? Come on. Let's get some tickets. We'll go see John Mohead. We'll go see and eat and drink and be merry, it says on the poster. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Behind my house, I learned a lot about this world way down south.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Be beautiful, Mississippi. Volunteers are the heart and soul of Keep Mississippi Beautiful's work in communities across the state. Keep Mississippi Beautiful has 60 affiliates across the state who are looking for volunteers just like you. Beginning in March, Keep Mississippi Beautiful is celebrating the Great American Cleanup's 25th year. You can have fun while volunteering in your community and help make it a clean, green, and beautiful place to live. Find out more on our Keep Mississippi Beautiful website, keepmsbeautiful.com. Be beautiful. Join our community.
Vibrant bunch of gourd growers in our state. The Mississippi Gourd Society is fantastic. They are. If you don't know about them, go there. You can find them on Facebook and on other social media, I'm sure. They send me a note, excuse me, every year, letting me know when the fest is, and they do such a cool event. You not only learn about how to take care of the gourds you grew, but also get a chance to swap seeds with people and ideas and do crafts and all of these cool things.
Well, that's awesome. I love you.
Are you a gourd person?
Well, yeah, I love gourds. My papaw would always have gourds, and he would hang them for his martens. And there would always be, you know, quite a few older ones laying around. Mm-hmm. And I was a kid. Mm-hmm. They were fascinating. But also, yeah, I'm curious for the gourd growers. Like, what is the volume inside of a gourd? What is the measurement? Because I like to, when I say I had a gourd full of wine or a gourd full of beer, that's kind of my measurement.
And well, it depends on whether you're talking about a dipper gourd or a bottle gourd.
Like one of the,
it's a different amount.
Yeah,
it's a different amount.
Not one of the little gourds. But
the bottle gourds, the one that you can carry the whole thing with you as you go, of course, are the subject of some work today. The folks at the Boyce Thompson Institute. No, this is a Lagenaria, for those of you who are gourd people. This is Lagenaria ciceria. Ciceraria. And it is one of the most beautiful gourds. It is the purple martin gourd, and it is also the one that, you know, we make into all sorts of big things because it's a bottle gourd. And what they have done is to realize that they've, after analyzing almost 200 genomes around the world of these things, it turns out that we've been using them for exactly what they are, bottles, for many, many, many more years than we thought. The plant is actually, because you carry one with you and it's got a couple of seeds in the bottom, when you took that ship across the oceans back when that was the only way to go, the gourd went with you. When people began to take tools around with them and do, you know, have civilization, what we call the garden part, as opposed to hunting and gathering, they were going to guard their food that they were growing and get in a place, the gourds are all there. The researchers have discovered all of these cool things, not only the genetic diversification, but also the number of musical instruments and containers and everything else that have been used from the ancient civilizations for all this time with our beautiful gourds. It's just so cool. It tells you, it's really very, very few things, you know, that you get into that you don't realize there's some history there. There's somebody else that can tell you about it. There's perhaps a series of records or a long-term opportunity to study what someone else did. In this case, it's everything from fossils to simply written, you know, once we started writing, we had written records. What was on the list, you know? Well, the ship's manifest included bottle gourds. I mean, we know these things. And because of that, participating in their growing and using them is a wonderful tradition. It's something more people should be part of, I think.
Well, and I hate that I never really picked my papa's brain on those gourds because I found him fascinating. He passed away, but he would grow them, and they were huge. They had, you know, some of them were a little small, but those weren't ones that he would use for the Martin houses.
No, those are the dippers.
Just
and
fascinating.
Other things.
And yeah. I wish I'd have asked because they were farmers. You know, they could farm and
well,
do anything.
If you have full sun and you have access to water and the willingness to use it, you can grow gourds and you can grow loofah sponges and you can grow merlitons and you can grow cacuzzas. You can grow all of those big old summer things, but you got to have full sun all day long. You got to have soil that can tolerate them being there. Obviously, it's got to be able to drain enough that they can put their roots in it, but you've also got to do the water thing. And that it's magnificent to see them grow, though. It's so beautiful.
Well, and I put up the map of the research. This is what it looks like. They're projecting for the summer. It's extended heat in the south and potentially.
I was looking at that.
So, again, just and it said it could be. Those are projections that would explain out prolonged periods of heat in the south, obviously, in that.
I mean, when we have this, you have, for you, those of you who are not getting the joy of supertalk.tv at this moment, you may be driving in your car. Be careful and don't drive off the road when I tell you that this is a heat sink that is everywhere except the panhandle of Florida and Mobile.
Basically, what
everything
we had last
else,
year.
The same thing we had last year. And indeed, you don't necessarily go to the coast for cooler conditions, of course, because it's hot. The air is hot. But there will be a whole lot of vacation planning that will take place further
Florida
over to the
like
east a little bit. Florida looks pretty good in this
I wonder
one.
If Florida like got involved with them and said, hey, when you do that orange stroke,
just leave that off of here.
Department of Tourism.
Just leave that off of here. Don't do that part. But it's a rough one. It's a rough map. And, of course, the correspondent one is that the northern tier is because we are in that – it's so different. The northern tier is going to be cooler. The bottom lower tier is going to be hotter. Or none of this will happen and something else will take
over. Well, it does disclose that these are statistical probability models, which I used in finance a great deal. So, and you would imagine the signal strengths at this point this far out are weaker than they will be as they go. So you just want to pay attention to those things. Not that you can
in other
really
words, they project where and when the cicadas are going to come out. That's easier to predict because we know where they live for their 13 years and 17 years. The weather is not so easy to predict. We don't know exactly when all this will happen. But as I say, water your plants deeply. Get your vegetables
moral
in
to
early.
The story, yeah, right.
And keep yourself some shade around if you want to plant this summer because you're going to need it. So,
don't sit back thinking that it might be a mild one because the models are saying otherwise at this moment.
Yeah, not telling us that. Corinne wants to know about small gardenias. She's having trouble getting them to really do their thing, and she says she's got 3 or 4 hours of sunlight. I don't know if you can grow the mini the gardenia radicans. The little one is generally speaking a morning sun and a very warm environment sort of plant that you would put in. You might put it in a container. You might put it in the front bed up next to your front door because it's going to be well drained, and it's going to, you know, you'll remember to water it if it's very dry, all those kinds of things. But I don't know if 3 to 4 hours is enough to get the kind of bloom that you're getting. I can tell you that the problem is that wherever we find that gardenia radicans doesn't do well, this is not the traditional bush gardenia. This is a little flatter plant delicious smells, but it's a smaller plant. And for the most part, they suffer with extremes. They like a very moderate environment. They like that morning sun. They like a well-drained soil, but they don't ever want to be dried out entirely, nor do they want to be inundated with water. So sometimes I've seen them mulched so heavily because people thought that they were going to dry out, that actually they were staying completely wet underneath their soil. And the reverse can be true because these are not fast-growing plants. I don't know a variety that is going to take less sun than another. But I can tell you the conditions for them are going to need to be very well-drained soil, morning sun, at least that 4 hours that you're talking about, and to not be overwatered. I do love gardenias. They're lovely. They're beautiful, beautiful plants. I'm sort of amazed at the numbers of things that people are really into. You know, I'm always in favor of citizen science. The high school students from my old hometown, I probably can't call it my hometown, but my old town of Oakland, California, are working into the field of exoplanet research. Tell your kids they need to dream big. You know, we got a lot to do in this world, and we're counting on them. Now, we're going to think about it, because we got another hour of the Garden Mama Show, and I sure hope you'll decide to come along with us. Stick around.
I didn't even know you. You couldn't have been too much more than tame.
Superior. It's more than a name. It's a promise that we make to our customers to provide you the highest quality U.S. farm-raised catfish at your favorite restaurant, your family reunion, or on your dinner table. Hey, this is Steve Azar, and I want to let you know that with Superior Catfish, you know the next bite is as good as the first, time after time, made possible by your friends and neighbors here in Mississippi. Remember, there's catfish. Then there is Superior Catfish.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
I have diabetes.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Ah, Kathy's blueberries are looking good, y'all. Mine are too. We think we've got fruit. We'll know very shortly, but they do look very well. She says this was the last year was not good. We didn't have a good year last year in Zone 8 particularly. She said it only got down to 29 once, and they covered up the blueberries. And what do you think? I think they look great. I don't see any signs of damage. I also don't see anything like all of the flower petals being blown off before pollination could happen. But I also don't see any damage to the twigs and whatnot. So I think you're in good shape. We'll know soon. That's really about the only thing we can be confident of, is that we will know soon. Haven't heard from Rhett in a while. Hey, Rhett. I want that ringtone. I'm trying to get that to be my ringtone. He says that the little chiming sound. Yes, that is the deeply researched.
Very deeply researched.
Very deeply researched.
That was how long a cut was that that we whittled down?
Oh my goodness! Yeah. It went on and on and on because it was different all the way through it in different places.
It sounded different. It speeds up and then it's like the it was fun, but it was like an hour of chimes.
The idea that anybody's going to record that many hours of chimes blowing in the wind, but they do and they are there, and we pick the one we like.
We got gold, Garden Mama.
He says he thinks somebody's calling him every time we enter.
Yeah, man, hey, Rhett,
we're calling you.
Every time we intro, I'm like, Rhett, where you at?
Right. We're calling you, Rhett. We want you to get here.
It's a classic
chimes. Now he's going to show me which one it is. See, mine doesn't have that. Mine, I don't think I've got that. But I like it. It's a good sign.
I like the one on that says story time.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I don't know if I want to hear that one or not. Interestingly enough, Rich is at the reservoir and has got a Sasanqua that kind of fulfills my front yard plant problem. If you want this Sasanqua to get going, you're going to have to cut it back by at least half and see whether it's still alive. In other words, you'll scratch the bark and you're going to cut it down to that point. But this is right in the front of your house. So the chances of me letting that grow there for another 5 years to come back to its full self is probably not that great. This is one of the ones I'm going to say, you have my permission to cut it down, dig it up, move it someplace else, and let it recover in another part of the garden. And put something else in this front patch that where you're going to have to see it every day. Now, if you like a challenge, then you leave that there, and every day you go and you look and you say, okay, now put on another leaf, and you tell it that it better hurry up. But to rejuvenate it is really a matter of taking off one-third to one-quarter, provided all that's alive. You scratch down the bark, down the stem on the bark and make sure that it is. And if it is, you cut it back severely and start fertilizing it. Fertilize it now. Fertilize it again in June. Don't let it dry out. And as much growth as that Sasanqua can put on, it will put on. They're not fast-growing plants, but they're not dawdlers either. So you'll be able to get some good result from that. It's really pretty. We're looking at the bugs in the garden, and it looks like white grubs. And white grubs, of course, are not uncommon. They can be anywhere from the size of a quarter inch long all the way to, and when they're fat and healthy, they'll be an inch and almost a full circle of tight body that they grow around themselves. But what we're looking at, of course, are things that are in the soil and why are they there? The first thing is that they're there because they're a food source for moles and other things, but primarily moles. So if you've also had a mole problem, it's even more likely that it's a white grub issue. The soapy water that I suggested, which is basically one squirt of something into warm water, and it's going to be, everybody says use Dawn. I don't know. There's so many different kinds of Dawn now. I don't really know. But just an old-fashioned, solid soapy thing is what they're trying to get you to do. And that, in turn, will run them off or will actually smother some of them. And then if you don't find that gets rid of enough of them to give you a comfortable place to plant, that's when you go and get something that you can work into the soil that will take care of the problem of white grubs and yet still be safe for food. So that's all, that all works. It's a good set of questions. Y'all are really smart. Real gardeners, real questions. I like it. Oh, I have a new place. I don't have a bucket list, y'all. But there are places that I want to go, and now I have a new one. All right, let's get out the RV. University of Alaska Fairbanks. What? Yes. I know a lot of people have taken the cruise and have gone up and seen the glaciers, and I think that's a wonderful thing. I would enjoy that. I would love seeing 40-pound cabbages, that grow in the 24-hour light up there, that kind of thing. That would be interesting. But now, oh, my goodness, we're trying to put together paleoclimate indicators, paleontology, you see where this is going, and sedimentology, that is to say how things fall into place and where they are only maybe 90 million years ago. This is a new find, a large find of dinosaur tracks and fossilized plants and tree stumps. It's in far northwest Alaska, and this is about this tells us a lot about the climate and the movement of animals when they began traveling between Asia and the North American continents. I just want to go see that. I don't know if a drone can do this one for me. I've said, you know, I want the drone to take me to Machu Picchu, but I might have to actually try to go to Alaska. This is the time, this is the beginning of what people think of as the Bering Land Bridge. And for those of you who have studied this particular connection between Asia and North America, the question always was, and then what? You know, what came from where? Which creatures went which place, how all of these things did. This is the Nanushuk Formation, and it gives us a snapshot of what the high-latitude ecosystem looks like on a warmer Earth. And that's why this eventually, of course, was a bridge, is because it thawed out enough for people and creatures to come across and work. They did this work a number of years ago, of course, but they're just now developing it into something that they can talk about so that we don't all go there and mess it up in terms of a research site. I have to be very careful about that. People are not people are a little too excited when they hear that somewhere is, quote unquote, crazy rich with dinosaur footprints. Well, I am. I want to be there. They found some 2 foot in diameter stumps in that space. So it was just like walking through the woods of millions of years ago. So this particular formation is both marine and non-marine characteristics, but what the authors here are working on are the non-marine sediments exposed on the upper part of the river there. And it's really very cool. Two-legged plant eaters were about 60% of the total tracks discovered. Four-legged plant eaters accounted for another almost 20%. Birds were a little bit non-avian. Bipedal dinosaurs, 10%. Wow. That's a lot. And all their feet are there, all their footprints. I'm interested. Okay, who's going to Alaska with me? Let's go.
I'm in. I've known quite a few people that either worked in the pipeline business or the oil business or something and spent time there.
I've known quite a few people who ran away and wanted to get as far from something as they could, and they went to Alaska.
I think that was the point. You know, you can make a good living and kind of get away from all the hustle and bustle.
Whatever it was you didn't want to be around.
I've never heard anybody say they didn't like it. That, you know,
you're right.
I've never heard anybody go, Alaska, nah. Yeah.
You're right.
It seems to be very cool. And although the weather is harsh, the obviously the terrain and just the beauty, natural beauty and raw nature of it all is something you don't see.
No. I'm probably not going to see glaciers unless I go to Alaska. You know? Finland's just not in my bailiwick, I don't think. But I'm telling you, lush, wet environment in northwestern Alaska, that's pretty intriguing. And of course, dinosaur footprints. Come on, who doesn't want to go see that? Well, maybe a lot of people. Hopefully not too many people will go and tear it all up. I have been developing a new category of plants, and it's certainly not new to science or anything, but it's just my own personal way of writing about them, and I'm calling them memory makers. These are the ones that really pull something, evoke something in you, pull something to the surface of your emotional tablet when you see it. And in my case, this latest one has been the double bridal reef spirea. Now, I recognize if we're going to grow spireas, there's a whole boatload of them. But the double bridal reef has a really wonderful attachment for me because I've seen it all my life. Whether it's the Florida panhandle or whether it's the lower part of Alabama or even up to Birmingham, you know, and across the Gulf Coast, all the way up in throughout Mississippi and Louisiana. But especially big and gorgeous and beautiful, they have been in Cajun country, in the southern part of Louisiana, where I spent so much time. And there is where I saw this particular, what I describe as a Taiwanese reunion. We have two plants that are native to Taiwan that have found their way to each other's company in very deep South Louisiana and other places too. But they're particularly, because they grow so fast and they get so big there, the juxtaposition of double bridal wreath spirea with big old azaleas in a hedge, in a flowering hedge form, is one of the most dramatic things that I ever have seen. And I really loved it. The contrast is perfect between the trumpet shapes and the brightly colored azalea flowers, usually Formosa, but not always. A brightly colored flower, though, up against long branches covered in tightly knotted up, doubled flowers of the bridal wreath. It makes a beautiful scene in the garden, and it's one of those things that you really don't have to do very much for. If you'll prune them after they bloom, give them a little fertilizer maybe every few years or every year when you're first growing them, and then after that not so often. And keep them mulched, you know, a little water in a dry season, but they're really not very picky about that part once they are established. And we go back again to you got to be sure you water that first couple of years. If you're planting shrubs now, mark your calendar. Come June, you need to be doing a deep water every week. Watch the weather. But if it goes like we're given to expect, not going to be a lot of rain this summer, and you don't want to lose what you're putting the energy into planting right now. So that's my beautiful spirea story for today. There are a lot of other memories that go with it that sometimes include bee stings, sometimes include, should I admit this, jars with bees in them. And you'd close the jar and poke a few holes in the top just to see how long you could keep them alive in there. Yeah, we did that. Maybe that's why the bees come after me now. I'm not really sure. Oh, I got several reports from the blue cornflower seeds that I sent out to you last fall. People are starting to see them coming into bloom, and it's just been wonderful. I've put up a couple of pictures here, but I got to tell you that it really is one of the best blues in my garden. I like it because it lasts a long time in the vase, but it really lasts a long time in the garden, too. Right now, there are probably 25 stems blooming at my place and a bunch more that are budded up, getting ready to go. But they have been there for a couple of weeks through the rain. They don't get knocked down. They open up a little bit, get a little flatter maybe, but they still have a beautiful form and lovely, lovely color. I did not know what a brachiosome was. I was supposed to. I'm sure I had to define it on something somewhere along the way in biology. But this is an interesting question for me, is if everything has a purpose, if everything comes in and brings us more information about something else, then I have to appreciate, well, even leafhoppers. Now, if you've never been able to grow eggplants, for example, the deep summer crops, and when you say they're not doing so well, you look on the leaf and it looks just lightly stippled all over, like something has just kind of poked it a little bit. It has. That's a leafhopper. That's what they do. You're not going to see them. They're visible, but you're not likely to see them. I should put it that way. They are, quite frankly, the cleverest of all. And by that, I'm telling you, Harry Potter's Cloak of Invisibility, they invented it. The leafhoppers are responsible for this. They secrete and coat themselves in mysterious particles. I love when scientists call something mysterious. It's only mysterious because they haven't figured out its genome yet. They'll get it. But this is really a next generation technology discovery to try and understand how these things work. What they did for the very first time, they replicated exactly the geometry of these particles, which had never been done before. These are the brachiosomes, or brachiosomes, whichever way you want to pronounce it, to understand how they absorb, that's right, they absorb both visible and ultraviolet light. Now, that means that the leafhoppers are wearing a cloak of invisibility when they come in to ravage your plants. This gives them a great advantage, you might imagine. Coming along with the study from National Academy of Sciences, they have a what is called a soccer ball-like geometry, which means that there's places where their bodies go in and places where their bodies go out. And we haven't really understood what that was about since we realized it first could observe it back in the 1950s. In 2017, though, the Penn State research team began to look at this how a little more deeply with newer technologies, and they were actually able to create a basic synthetic version of the brachiosome so they could study them. You can only imagine how hard it is to get a bunch of leafhoppers to cooperate in a research study, considering that they're beyond T90. But what we had the opportunity to do here is to look at the way that technology in nature can impact the technology going forward into the real world. And indeed, Maybe we can hide the thermal signatures. Maybe they won't know I'm coming after them, those leafhoppers. If I can cloak myself in the same thing they cloak themselves in, I can go get them, right? Well, probably not. But the idea of a cloak of invisibility is something that we cannot do without in our imaginations. And knowing that we have found the key to the way at least one critter makes that happen, it's pretty intriguing stuff.
Yeah, I want the predator one.
Well, of course you do.
That's the camo I want. Just hit a button and, wah, 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 and just invisibility.
Have it just work entirely. Yeah,
wouldn't that be the best camo ever?
I saw an ad for the March Madness tournaments and stuff, and the guy had screens all over his coat so you couldn't see him. It's kind of
that's
same
really
thing.
Yeah,
it's kind of the
it.
Same thing. All right, coming back, we will take some more of your terrific texts today and get a few more stories about research happening and maybe even pique your curiosity about some plants. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
Do you ever feel like you're in the dark? Well, with a propane generator, you'll never be in the dark again, at least when the lights go out. Enjoy the comfort and safety of knowing you have a propane generator always ready when the electricity goes out. Propane generators assure you will always have power. Propane fueled, clean cooking, hot water on demand, warm and consistent heat, and power when you need it most. Why would you choose anything else? Energy for everyone. Propane. Visit mspropane.com. That's mspropane.com today.
Hi, I'm Jade.
.net.
It's not if you're going to have a spill at your business or workplace, it's when.
ESISupply.net.
Exorbent pads by the bundle or roll.
ESISupply.net.
Socknet boom products, oil gator, oil dry spill kits, and much more.
ESISupply.net.
Take it from Scary Gary.
If it can spill, it's gonna.
ESI Supply, 601-933-4910. That's 601-933-4910 or online at
ESISupply.net.
Heard the catch? At GMC, we strive to make buying your next vehicle easy and take care of you long after you drive off the lot. That means upfront and honest pricing, doing everything we can to make the time you spend in the dealership as short or as long as you need. It means we understand that purchasing a vehicle is more than just a transaction for you. We want you to enjoy the experience as much as we appreciate your business. Find your next Buick, GMC, or pre-owned vehicle at FillmoreBuickGMC.com. Fillmore Buick GMC. You drive everything we do.
Do you suffer from allergies, sinus or respiratory problems, or just want to improve the quality of air you breathe in your home or business? Pure Air Consultants can help. As your indoor environmental specialist, we clean air ducts, install UV lights, and service all makes and models of heating and cooling systems. We offer the most dependable Energy Star qualified systems in the industry. Call Pure Air Consultants today, 601-939-7420.
A proud provider of Rheem Home AC Systems. Are you feeling it? Rheem. The new degree of comfort.
Hi, this is Shelby with Two Men in a Truck. At Two Men in a Truck, we've added a new service option to our brand, junk removal. Whether you're deep cleaning, renovating, or staging your home to sell, our Two Men in a Truck junk removal option is perfect to get the job done. Our professionally trained moving and junk removal teams will load and haul away your unwanted junk for you. Visit twomeninatruck.com to learn more and get a free junk removal quote. That's twomeninatruck.com.
Me mama like a wagon wheel, rock me mama any way you feel. Hey mama, rock me. Oh, rock me mama like a wind and a rain. Rock me mama like a southbound train. Hey, hey.
if you'll be weeding the garden, planting a shrub, marching in a parade, maybe watching somebody do some art at Ocean Springs. We've got so many events going on around here. I really do appreciate that we are virtually into spring. We're here. It's a little on the cool side, but guess what? Most places, spring is supposed to be sort of cool. I love this particular note. Are black-eyed peas good companions for butternut squash? Hey, Kathy and Greg are both looking into this. She's growing squash on the cattle arch. I love this. And she wants to plant black-eyed peas, bush or vine with it. There's not any problem at all with doing this. The only bean, the only pea that I like better or that seems to grow better than just classic black eyes is actually purple hulls, and they just seem to have a real lush growth project. I think when we talk about squash and growing beans near them, I believe that we are both moving nitrogen into the beans, but also improving the soil around the base of the squash. It's also true that if you fertilize the squash too much, you'll get leaves and no squash. So if the beans are there, they will help to take some of that nitrogen, but they also shade the base of the plant. And that helps in many ways. First of all, it helps to keep the soil temperature at an even keel. It won't be really cold when it rains or really warm when it doesn't in the springtime weather. But it will absolutely also act as a living mulch to hold the weeds down. So I have no problem with that. I don't think there's any problem with whichever one you decide that if you like to eat it, you should grow it. And so any of the beans are going to do well. My only thing in terms of those field peas that we talk about, black-eyed peas and purple hull peas and the ones that we actually call field peas and, you know, Mississippi Silver Skins and Lady Creams and all those things. The only thing that's different is that some of them grow better in hotter weather. So if you find that your black-eyed peas are not coming up well, just pick another one and you'll find one that you like. It's an interesting idea, though. This whole business of companion planting is not always as well understood as it should be. Usually there's a reason. I'm probably going to get this wrong. Carrots Love Tomatoes, I think, was the name of a book at one time. Well, I mean, yeah, okay, they don't grow at the same time, you know, where we live, but okay, I get that. It's one of those bits and pieces of stuff that when you try it and it works, you keep doing that. I know that. Oh, wonderful. Four hummingbirds at the feeder in Carroll County. It's definitely spring. That's a wonderful. I did fill my feeders about 10 days ago, and I've seen one. So I'm waiting. I'm hoping that they're – hoping you are actually catching them and I didn't miss them. So that's fun. There's a lot to be said for hummingbird gardening. There's a lot to be said for a bunch of stuff. Now, I got two things, Lance. This is going to jump right into your wheelhouse today. The first one is that we now have a new strategy to facilitate muscle regeneration after injury. And as somebody who's been a sportsman your entire life, we won't talk about the time you fell off the deer stand, but we'll talk.
My dad did that. He was in traction for a while on that deal.
You always hear about that. You know, you guys can get yourselves
goofing
into
off.
A situation.
Goofing off.
But as it turns out, the majority of players – when the majority of players decide to leave a sport, it has more to do with muscle injury than anything else. So this is obviously a subject that the folks want to study. University of Barcelona is doing this one. It's the first one to try and measure scientifically the rate of recovery and more effective recovery through things like low oxygen availabilities, hypoxias, as well as hyperbarics and those other kinds of things. Nobody's ever actually put this into study format. And they're finding out some pretty interesting things. The questions of why this works are another issue altogether, but the idea is that trying to get the high-performance sports folks, as well as the professional sectors like high-altitude mining, for example, have got to keep themselves healthy and keep themselves able to use their muscles. And going into the hyperbaric chamber changes everything.
Oh, yeah, it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. I read a study mm-hmm. this past week where a gentleman had stayed underwater for 20 or 30 days or 60 days, whatever it was. But when he went and had all of his tests done, the gentleman was in his late 50s, I think. And when he went and had all of his tests done by the doctor afterwards and coming back up, the mm-hmm. pressure that he had been exposed to for so long. It basically changed his cell structure to the point where he was about 20 years younger internally. And there were aging things that happened, you know, facial recognition, things like that, where, you know, you could tell that there was significant differences that the chamber, which was actually a hyperbaric type chamber.
Essentially, that's where you, I mean, when you're in that circumstance at the bottom of the ocean, that's a very
amazing
much
story. But to be in that kind of isolation for so long, but again, that kind of advancement in medicine, you would think you're looking for that fountain of youth. That might be one of the places you find it. It may not be up here. It may be at the bottom of the ocean.
Is inside okay? Do I need it on the outside too, though? I don't know.
It had a dual effect. It was cell structure had been rejuvenated almost, like it had had new energy blasted into it.
That's a different world for sure. Now, on the other hand, we might have wanted him to have one of these. We now have devices that we can put on you to recognize human emotions in real time. This is not a mood ring. This is not, you know, this is not those, oh dear, I better not talk to her. You know, the lights are flashing around her head today. I better not. She's going to go vent. You know, we better not do that. But the system is really an interesting thing, talking about moving wireless data transfer so that you can actually in real time see the emotion that is registering in the person's brain. Now, this sounds trivial to a lot of us, but I realize how important it could be for people who are, for example, nonverbal or who have had a trauma that prevents them from physically being able to speak, or people who have no longer have lost the ability to read their emotions. We need to know if this or that is making them more comfortable or less comfortable, or more content or less content. And being able to do that from the outside would certainly be a lot easier. Now, I worry that it might register me and say, well, she's really a whole lot more, you know, this calm on the surface thing is not really where she's at. That's probably true. But we might not want to tell you all of that. Understanding and accurately extracting emotional information, of course, is a very big challenge. Not only do I not necessarily feel things in the same way that you will, nor express them that way, it's hard to get a commonality. And that's what they're trying to do with this, trying to figure out the emotions in real time, because it would be helpful to be able to understand these things. You can't always tell by the look on someone's face what they're actually feeling, much less what they're thinking. Molly's in Columbus. Ooh, I have tulips, and the last 2 years the leaves have sprouted, but no blooms. Yeah, that's true. You're seeing the normal progression of tulips, even in Columbus, in the South. Here's the deal. In order for tulips to bloom the second year, for them to be like Ohio, okay, and they has to be those particular varieties that can rebloom, but it is also the case that they have seasons. They have very definite cold weather. They don't have the up and down and up and down and up and down that we have all through our winter season. And they also have a spring that comes on, maybe not all at once. One of our problems here can be that spring arrives so quickly that our tulips turn around and grow and bloom in about a minute, and then they're gone. But what happens after that is the long, hot summer. And it's that summer. It's not so much the moderate winter. I mean, not so much the even winter. That's important. Not so much the prolonged spring. That's important. But it's that summer that prevents them from multiplying. When you plant a tulip bulb, you're actually planting a daughter. The mother bulb was in the ground somewhere and grew and reproduced. And when that reproduction happens, you're getting bulbs around the base of that tulip, and you will get those as the blooms the next year, the plants the next year. We don't have conditions that are conducive to that. We can get the leaves to come up, but we very seldom can get the flowers to return. There are a couple of varieties that we are able to predictably get to rebloom in the South. And they are cute, and they're small, and they're not nearly as dramatic as the tulips that we plant each autumn. So I would say put those in your garden, but be aware that they're not going to be as flashy or showy, and certainly not as good for the vase as the others would be. Okay? That's not necessarily emotional. I appreciate Robert's point of view, but the polygraph is not going to give you my emotions so much. Okay? Okay. Now, You would think that this would be a dog story, but it's not. I have more than one time, y'all have heard me say that there's something in nature that teaches us everything. And in this case, the University of Wyoming wants us to recognize what we can learn from white storks. See, it's not a dog story. The migration routes of white storks are incredible because they have so much internal smarts. They definitely take care of what they're looking to do and what they're beginning to do. The way that they move between their destinations during the spring migration to the summer summer areas where they're able to breed and nest. I was trying to run those two words together. Anyway, suggests that what they are doing is actually experiential. They are learning from their own process, or as we would say with children, they're learning from their mistakes. Genetics and social behavior, of course, are very important factors in the way animals migrate. But now that we are getting into a deeper ability to examine these things, what we're finding is that individual experience means a great deal to them, too. And they're able, in this story is in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, they're reporting this particular, the story of this research. What they did was they found out that young storks really took their time. As they migrated, they stopped here, looked there, went over yonder, came back, got with the big group, went over on the side, did all these sorts of things. But as they aged, they got faster in their migrations in the same way that their parents had done. They don't necessarily even take the same routes, though, because they do have to adjust. For example, to get to somewhere that there's feeding and nesting at dark time and not in the middle of the night, they might have to go around a weather front, or they might have to go straight through something that another set of birds would find overwhelming or intimidating. These are big old white storks. They're pretty tough. So that experiential learning is probably more applicable with them simply because of that. Pretty interesting. There's no news about baleen. Oh, my goodness. I don't even know from baleen whales, but they got news. Let's see. Oh, the question about tulips, is that the same for daffodils? No. Most of our daffodils will rebloom for years. They'll come up, send their leaves up, and then flower. If they don't flower in the subsequent years, it might be a variety that can't, but that's not usual. What's usually happening is that the bulbs themselves have sunk into the soil, and therefore the flower bud can't get up through the bulb to get to the surface to bloom, or they're so crowded that they've done the same thing. They're strangling each other. So that's the two things that happen to daffodils. Let's see. That's right. In Mississippi, we're lucky to have Van Zuyveren, one of the largest tulip bulb distributors in the world. We're very lucky to have them here. They do other things, too. It's not all tulips. But they are right here. From the Better People Department, we're all interested in being better people, I hope. And what is the definition of better people? Well, healthy, relatively speaking, for one's age and situation, but also that internal balance. I found myself the other evening talking to a young person who's about to get married, and I said, I think you're doing a really smart thing. That work-life balance is the most important thing that takes you through the most years of your life with the highest satisfaction levels for yourself as well as for your family. Now, talking about older folks, that would be like me, it turns that the University of California and Los Angeles Health Services, there are some of us around here who are looking for somebody to teach us Tai Chi. And it's been years since I saw anybody doing that in a park in the morning and that sort of stuff. But I'm thinking of opening up a Tai Chi pallet in my back garden because I got the space for it. And those are the sorts of things that we think of older people doing. We also need to think about yoga. We've got a study now that's letting us know that older women who practice yoga actually are able to keep their minds a little bit sharper. We all know we'd like to keep our minds a little bit sharper and delay the onset of some of the things that are going to happen. So maybe we'll have to follow up, you know, we'll have to do a little yoga as well as trying to get that Tai Chi going in Fondren. Let me know what y'all think. All right, now, there's no joke. This is my hidden charm. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Okay, so pure. It's the morning, too. Real gold love. This Friday, too. For eyes, they talk. And say, come on. What kills me, baby?
Superior. It's more than a name. It's a promise that we make to our customers to provide you the highest quality U.S. farm-raised catfish at your favorite restaurant, your family reunion, or on your dinner table. Hey, this is Steve Azar, and I want to let you know that with Superior Catfish, you know the next bite is as good as the first, time after time, made possible by your friends and neighbors here in Mississippi. Remember, there's catfish. Then there is Superior Catfish.
Hi, I'm Sammy the Shovel, reminding you how important it is to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig anywhere in or around any homeowner's yard. It doesn't matter if you're putting in a new mailbox, installing a fence, French drain, sprinkler system, even a flower bed. You need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig, or you could end up responsible for a water line leak, utility line with gas or propane, or even worse. Safety is in your hands. Call 811. Every dig, every time. You dig?
Progressive asks.
I feel the earth move under my feet. I feel the sky tumbling down. I feel my heart start to tremble whenever you're around. Ooh, baby, when I see your face.
You're so lucky you can't hear me sing. Now, y'all, Carole King, of course, is an integral part, an icon, a legend. And I have to tell you this. I don't do this too often, and I hope he's not listening because he'll really be mad. My son is taking me to see Beautiful, the Carole King musical, this week in his town, his city in New Orleans. That's so cool to take your mother to something like that. Come on. Y'all all need to do that. So, whatever it is she's into, take her somewhere. She'll be happy.
And it's a musical.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes. She will speak nicely about you. It's about her career and also those of us who grew up on all of it, or she was older than me, but anyway, the whole business of arguing people arguing about songwriting and stuff is just intriguing to me. So the music as well as the backstory will be fun. And I'll get to have a nice time with him. So that's even better. Y'all, today is something. I didn't even tell Lance I was going to do this to him. This man has a recipe, y'all. I've not had it. I can't vouch for it personally, but his enthusiasm about it tells you that the perfect way to celebrate today, which is Chip and Dip Day and also Tamale Day, has to do with baking your tamales in your dip. Is that what that is?
That's how you do it. I mean, if you want the best results.
I love that.
There's all kinds of options. You're not going to go wrong with that.
We're going to make it into one dish is the point. We're going to bake the whole business together, and then you can just have the tortilla chips and eat for 2 or 3 days.
I do that at deer camp. I've tried every recipe possible. The Frito corn chip. The heavy duty works really good.
Yeah. Those are good.
Are excellent. They got enough grease in them too that you could, you know, change your oil in your car.
That could happen.
It separates a little bit. It creates a little more juice.
The first time that anybody ever had Frito pies at an event, I can remember the look on everyone's mother's face. You know, it was that kind of thing. It's like, how much grease is in that? Yeah. Well, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's chili and Fritos and maybe some cheese, maybe some lettuce, maybe not. I don't know. Pretty intense stuff, though. And if, believe it or not, you need to celebrate that today. So today's the perfect day for all of that. Thank you, Jan. Appreciate you listening so very much. There you are. See, the last concert that she went to with her mother was to see Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And that's Katie from Long Beach. Go, Katie. That's exactly, that's perfect. Oddly enough, one of the first ones that I took my son to was the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young back in Chicago when he was a baby. But anyway, that's another whole set of experiences that you can have. It's not always impossible. You might talk to your parents about gardening. I know that my mother and I talked about baseball. I was more than happy to talk about baseball long distance every Sunday from wherever I was, because it meant that she wasn't going to ask me when I was going to get married or when she was going to have grandchildren or any of the other things that parents want to know. Talk about other things.
How are the A's doing?
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, they're
Let's
great,
go that
Mama.
Way, Mom.
We had such a good time. They invented the wave, you know. It was all of those kind of things. But you do have to, if you don't figure out a way to talk to your parents, you'll be sad later. So figure it out. That's all I can tell you. That's really fun. Took her to see Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I bet she was dancing too. See, happiness can be learned, but you've got to work at it. You can't just imagine that everybody's happy. We can learn it, but the lasting benefits come when we practice it. I have talked with y'all here for years about the fact that we have to choose how we're going to be on a day. The same stuff, not exactly the same incident, but the same level of stress, the same levels of challenge, the same kinds of events happen to every human being. This whole notion of terminal uniqueness, I'm the only person that has ever had this happen to me. Wake up. You're not the only one whose tomatoes have collapsed. You're not the only one whose lettuce is keeled over in a heavy storm. But you're also not the only one that's figured out a way to get around it and get through it and deal with it. So that's the whole business of working on your happiness on a day-to-day basis.
And you got to get up off the mat.
You do.
You got to get up. Keep moving.
When that emotional register is saying, oh, she's flat here, oh, you got to stand back up. You got to get back up. That's absolutely
And
true.
Happiness comes from that. You know, it's
yes,
funny.
It
we
does.
Had somebody this week, you're talking about happiness, you know, we were laughing about the how big the Mega Millions or Powerball and all that. We're almost at a billion.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know.
Scary.
You know, so money doesn't buy me happiness, he said, but it does get me the truck and the boat to pull behind it. And exactly, you know.
So, and then your phone rings because everybody you know finds out you got a bunch of money. And, oh, dear, you know, that's another whole thing. But I have always felt like if I was worrying about money first, something else was wrong. And even though I'm not a wealthy person, never have been, never will be, I do think that if that's the thing, if I'm worrying about the mercenary first, I'm probably not worrying about the other pieces of that emotional, you know, the banner that we're going to have on our foreheads that says sad, happy, this or that. The whole business of being happy, the whole business of practicing kindness is actually quite natural. If you look at a baby, what the baby wants is to be held and taken care of and fed, and all of that requires being kind of nice. They may yell a little bit. They may put out that vent that we talk about. But when it comes down to it, what that baby's looking for is your comfort. And when you're looking for your comfort and you find it, then the happiness can be learned, but you got to work at it. And I don't think that's any surprise to anybody. I do know that there are people who have a harder challenge to that than others. Because there's things like depression, there's other things that you might have a disease that you have to take a medication for that causes a lack of happiness. But at the same time, if you know that it's internal and you know you're going to practice it, get out in the garden. The plants aren't going to argue with you. Whether it's a rose bush in the front bed or it's a house plant that you have loved for your whole life or one that somebody just gave you, none of that matters. Take care of it. You'll feel better. You will do better as a human being because you took care of some things. Please don't forget, put on your schedule, April the 6th, my very favorite peach, Mark Patrick, and I will be at Doris Berry's Farmer's Market in Pearl right after this program. Go and register for the basket. That's going to be a hoot. And we're also going to be that afternoon, April the 6th, we will be at Floydine's in Carthage on Highway 35. Talking about plants, bringing plants to sell, doing different things that are, quite frankly, just celebrating a little bit of our own happiness and our own springness, getting ready for some fun in the garden.
And getting out in the country a little bit. I mean,
little
that's
bit.
A nice little drive.
It's a little drive.
I love Carthage, going up there and grew up, you know, going down to McGee, so I know 49 like the back of my hand. And Donna's
That's a nice stuff. One. That's yeah. a nice one. And of course, there will be a Ward's burger bag in the back of my car for you.
Yeehaw! I'll pay if you'll just get it. I want five little ones with chili and cheese.
Oh, Lord.
And that'll last me till afternoon.
Now, I was going to say about a minute, about, you know, something like that. Well, just because we're talking about food, I'm going to leave y'all with this. It's hearty. It's meaty. It's mold. Yes, that is correct. The genome of fungi for making a plant-based food has come a long way, folks. We are no longer just saying, cut up that portobello and put it on there instead of a bun or a piece of meat or whatever it is, which does work, by the way. It's delicious. But understanding how the genomes of mushrooms and other molds can transform these into gourmet, nutrient-packed meals, I want to imagine every time I talk about these things that there's someone that's going to go to their lunch meeting and say, do you know what that crazy woman on the radio was talking about? She was talking about mold. That's right. And we'll do it again next week. Right here on the Garden Mama Show.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
If you are building a new home or remodeling an older home, Amazing Propane is for you. A propane tankless water heater, a propane generator, a propane gas grill and oven, propane fireplaces, even lighting. Propane, such a versatile, clean, cost-effective source of energy for any home. Propane, clean American energy. Visit mspropane.com to learn more.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services.
I have diabetes.
A SuperTalk Mississippi Media production.